Hey, grandkids, what's going on? Welcome to the Stunt Granny Audio. As usual, a very special edition of the show, but this time I'm serious when I say that because we are here to discuss Extreme Championship Wrestling, Eastern Championship Wrestling, whatever you want to call it. We're here to talk about ECW, and we're talking about it because TNA is trying a pathetic excuse at an invasion-slash-reunion angle for ECW. We're here to look back at the original version, not the WWE version, and certainly not the god-awful TNA version. And this is actually part one of what we hope will be a two-part audio series. This time around, we're going to talk about our top 20 or so wrestlers from the original ECW era, and the idea tomorrow is to talk more chronologically about the Federation itself. So I'm Eric, and I am here with Dusty. Dusty, how are you tonight?
I got a little clickety-clack in my neck. Otherwise, I'm doing just fine.
And Dr. Dan Keister, also known in internet message board circles as Zura, how are you tonight, and can you help Dusty with the crick in his neck?
You know, I've had a similar ailment lately. It must be going around. I don't know. I hadn't thought about it until he mentioned it, so now I feel much worse. But
oh, great.
But I think we can tough it out. So I'm doing well overall.
Good deal. Well, Vince Russo is a pain in our asses, so.
In the true ECW spirit, we're going to work hurt.
That's right. So, very good.
Yep. Paulie would just tell us to do a line of coke and get the fuck out there and wrestle.
Go see New Jack and get some coke in you immediately.
Oh, Paul Heyman. So, yeah, this actually came up, I believe, off air when we were doing our, what was the last retro audio we did? Was it the King of the Ring set of audios? Is that right?
That was the last one I did, yes.
Okay, yep. And Dan, I think it was actually you who mentioned it while we were off air about the possibility of doing an ECW-themed show, and then you and Dusty had talked about it afterwards.
Yeah, that's right. It's something that's kind of had been on my mind for a while, I guess, and we talked about on the message boards and on instant messaging or private messaging or whatever, we talked about some things that I'd been most interested in my fandom, for lack of a better word, and ECW mm-hmm. would certainly be 1A along with Mid-South Wrestling, UWF being, you know, 1 and 1A in terms of the stuff I've enjoyed watching the most. And so it seemed like a good fit, and we kind of talked about doing it the 10-year anniversary of the closing up shop of the original ECW, which would have been early next year, and then this stuff that TNA is doing kind of sped things up a bit. Seemed like a good time to do it, as good of a time to do it as any. So that's kind of where we've been.
Agreed. And Dusty, what's tell us about basically the format of tonight's show. We're going to do something similar to what Wade and Bruce put themselves up to the task to do for more of an overarching concept when it comes to wrestling. We're taking this as a sort of a niche audio talking just about ECW tonight.
Yeah, and for people who think we don't plan these things, some thought did go into this one. We're basically going to do a top 20 list, and we're going to list them five at a time. At least at the very first, I reckon there will be a lot of similarities. And then as we get trail on, there will probably be more differences, and we can talk about them individually. By doing the top five makes more sense. Like, somebody I have at number four might be your number three or whatever.
Which is nice, that it lends itself to conversation, but we actually, in the process of planning this, hope that we weren't going to have too much redundant conversation, like mm-hmm. like I have Rhino at number four, and all of a sudden Dan's like, you idiot, why did I even suggest doing this? I have Rhino at number 29, and then when we get to this random or imaginary 29, now I'm going to talk about Rhino for 25 minutes. So there's definitely enough overlap early on where we can have some good conversation, but keep it fairly consolidated. And then have a little bit more spirited debate maybe the further we get down the list. And bring up some names that, I mean, and no one certainly forgot these names from the past, but, oh, yeah, I can see a good reason, or I hear good a legitimate purpose for Nova being number or whatever. Anyway, we're hoping that's where the discussion goes tonight.
Yeah, and I think kind of when we originally talked about this, it's you know, I've looked at your top 10, Eric, and we mm-hmm. have some disagreement, and I think that's to be expected because the criteria are pretty broad. I think we talked about, you know, kind of in-ring success in terms of having good matches, drawing power, whether it be in the pre-TNN, pre-pay-per-view era or after, anything that helped the company grow, mm-hmm. which is very subjective because there were so many different stages of growth for ECW. And the other is kind of personal preference. And so we mm-hmm. kind of left a little bit of personal taste in there. So it's not surprising that even though, you know, I've seen your top 10, I have 9 of the same top 10. it's certainly natural that that there's going to be some differences. And I don't know about you guys, but I had a very difficult time picking number 1. I had a very difficult time yep. kind of sorting. I kind of had tiers myself, and we might talk about that a little bit later, but it's not an easy job because ECW by its nature was never completely built around one person, although they certainly had eras that would be the, you know, the Shane Douglas era, the Taz era, or you know, you can name a number of different, the Rob Van Dam era, a number of different people, but it's going to be pretty subjective, I think.
Which is impressive for on speaking to ECW because of the parody at the top without being the Even Steven comedy hour. Am I right, Dusty?
Yeah, I feel you. Mm-hmm.
Dusty, take that criteria and sort of explain how you applied it to your top 20 list. What did you weigh yeah. more heavily than something else? What did you maybe bring that we didn't discuss or, you know, however you rank your guys?
Yeah, personal preference. Had one guy that's in both of your top 10s not even on my list because I fucking hate him.
okay.
Fuck that fucking piece of fuck. But anyway.
Did he have a second career as a fat lumberjack by any chance?
Yeah, he sure did. But, yeah, so personal preference weighed fairly heavily. But to go back to what Dan said, placing number 1 was the hardest part. It could have been 6 different people as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I had 7 that I was seriously looking at.
Sure.
1. Yep.
Now, see, I don't know how I came up with mine then because you two said that, agree on that point. I don't know how I came up with mine so easily. I debated for a second or two between maybe 3 guys, but there was one that stood out, and I'll explain why. But, yeah, from that point on, I mean, even right now looking at my list, the guy that I have listed at number 11, I'm not saying that the bottom half of my list is interchangeable with some of my honorable mentions, but there are some good arguments that can be made for a lot of these people, and so that's going to be part of our discussion tonight, too. I went with, ECW was never a 100% work rate promotion. It was never a 100% blood and guts promotion. It was never 100% high-flying. It wasn't even 100% storytelling, but to me, ECW was 100% spirit and soul, and that's kind of what I went by when I ranked my guys. You know, what they meant to the company, what the company meant to them, the quality of matches, of course, too, but really who embodied the spirit of ECW, and that's how I came up with my list. So, yeah, I think, and actually, Dan, while we're still talking about some of the criteria, I know you had mentioned something that I think I kind of veered off of the path of. You had talked, I think, about separating tag teams out. But as I went through, ECW is so smart with their tag teams, and correct me if I'm wrong, and that's not what you wanted to do, but ECW's tag team roster was always so strong, I just could not separate the tag team as a unit from the singles wrestlers. Like, the Dudley Boys, to me, meant just as much as, you know, Chris Chetty. I'm obviously joking when I say that name, but you know what I mean. Like, to me, it's all a big mix. Like, the characters are a unit, and to me, the tag teams fit in with the singles guys.
Yeah, I know, and I know that topic came up, and I don't recall whether we talked about it, you know, over the phone or whatever, but I went with the same, and you saw, I mean, I have a tag team in my top 10,
mm-hmm.
And I think we elected just to consider them as a single unit when they were really known as a tag team, and in one case, I'll have to look at my list a little more. Yeah, I kind of cheated in one case, and maybe, maybe not. I should have put these guys as a tag team, but I did just to fit them both in. But but yeah, they were not treated as lower in the card or less important. So it would make sense to consider a true tag team any way you consider a single wrestler. I did the same thing, and I have, you know, several tag teams in my list, at least in the top 20. So, yeah, I think that makes sense. The thing I'd suggest is that we spend just a couple of minutes, if time permits, and this may be better served for tomorrow night's show if we run long, just because I think the chronological stuff might not take quite as long, is to talk about managers slash commentators slash what other types of personalities as a separate list.
Sure. And actually, that's something that I have to ruin my surprise. I may have snuck somebody in there who we would normally be discussing in a separate list, but we'll get to that point. We'll cross that bridge when we get to number 12.
Well, no, and, okay, very good. But I mean, if you put Joey Styles in there, for example, what, you know, that becomes extremely difficult. It's just such a different criteria. I don't know if that's what you're thinking about, but you know, he made the shows in a lot of ways, but
yeah,
you know, it's totally different.
Yep. No, that's definitely a discussion we'll be having here after a while. Dusty, talk to me about that part of the criteria, too. How did that affect your ranking system? Did you have to bump any singles guys that you may have otherwise made an argument for, when instead you really felt the need to squeeze in a Danny Doring and Roadkill type of tag team, or Nova and Chetty?
No, I mean, I have several tag teams on my list, but I feel like they all deserve to be there. That's one thing that Paul Heyman and Jim Cornette have in common, which they have a lot of things in common, is that they both go out of their way to feature tag teams prominently, whereas anybody else in the big two really doesn't give two hoots and a holler about tag teams. So to me, it was just natural. I got, about four or five tag teams in my top 20. You know, all featured at some point, all, you know, main event people at some point in the company, pushed very heavily, featured on the television shows. And, no, you know, to me it was just natural. Who to put in the bottom three or four as far as singles wrestlers was the hardest part. You know, maybe I missed a tag team in there. We'll talk about that later.
Sure. All right. Well, I'm prepared to go through the list if you are, and I'm happy to keep going in the same, I guess, order that we've been discussing so far. And Dan, given you brought this up off-air in our previous retro audio, if you're ready to start, I'd like to hear your top five list and a brief explanation as to why you put each of those guys in your top five.
Okay. All five. Okay, we're going to do all five. Okay.
Sure.
My top five in order, and again, this is extremely difficult for the types of reasons that you talked about. Number one, I put Rob Van Dam. And you could certainly argue, well, you can look at I should probably just focus on the positives. He's my number one choice, so that's probably where I should, kind of like if you're doing fantasy football or something, you ought to focus on why you drafted somebody or why you went with somebody. For one, he's certainly not the only one, but he's someone that you saw develop completely as a personality, as a performer, as a interview, and as an incredible athlete within the confines of ECW. You saw him develop more than anyone else. He had an extremely successful tag team with Sabu. He carried the company in a lot of ways in terms of, I think, drawing, you know, ratings, pay-per-view buys. I mean, we bought pay-per-views because we knew Rob Van Dam was going to have a hell of a match. And I won't name any names, but the Japanese snobs of the world, and that stuff's great too, that, you know, didn't like the way he worked and thought he was showboated too much, yeah, they can go to hell. I mean, you don't have to buy the stuff if you don't like it. The guy was entertaining as all hell. I mean, just fantastic in terms of watching him be the centerpiece of the promotion, even though, you know, he was always just the TV champion and the real ECW didn't get the world title. And you could just, you know, you could think about, you know, he obviously had a great series of matches with Jerry Lynn. I saw your comments about why are they putting that as the main event of the pay-per-view, and I understand the criticism of Jerry Lynn, but given their choice set, I don't have a real problem with it if they're really going to do an ECW reunion pay-per-view, because I have, you know, fond memories of those matches. You know, he helped elevate Rhino. He worked with Bam Bam Bigelow, had great matches with him. He had some stuff with Taz. He obviously, his interaction with Sabu was just phenomenal. So,
oh, yeah.
That's my number one. I don't want to take an hour on this whole thing. Second, I went with Sandman.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I don't want to steal everybody's thunder on this. I'll let people, you know, talk a little bit themselves about this. But I think that's fairly obvious. He was the go-to champion anytime, you know, Raven had personal issues or they needed somebody to that was credible with the crowd that would be a good champion. And again, you know, his ring entrance, obviously, as much as anything else, was part of that. I guess people say, I never really watched Rocky Horror Picture Show, but people compare ECW to that whole crazy mentality of going up there. And I mean, I went to Philadelphia for CyberSlam 98.
Cool.
And you know, that was a big deal to me to go to the ECW arena. And this was kind of when it was maybe not at its peak, but it was still certainly close enough. I mean, we had just a fantastic time. And you know, you wanted to experience that whole Sandman, and somebody may tell me he wasn't there then. I think he was. No, he was definitely there because he did the interview segments. You wanted to experience that whole Sandman ring entrance, Sandman deal. I mean, that was a big part of the show. And those two, I had a really hard time deciding who was number one because Sandman, and part of it, again, is Sandman, even though he went to WCW, had probably as long of an important time period of helping ECW draw as anybody. And the stuff he did with Tommy Dreamer, I think we'll probably talk about tomorrow night. I mean, that whole angle, which was when I was first getting ECW on TV, that set up November to Remember, or at November to Remember, when, you know, he was blind and Tommy Dreamer came out to dedicate his career to Sandman. I mean, that we could talk about angles all day, but that stuff was just great. I'm trying to speed this along here. Maybe I shouldn't. I don't know. But third, I had Taz. Same type thing. When he was the champion, he was really the centerpiece of the promotion. And I think had that MMA appearance. And really when he shone bright, when he was at his peak, people don't understand that he never really achieved that in WWF. But he was really, you know, badass. I mean, his interviews were great. His interaction, again, with Sabu, with Bel Alfonso was great. And he was an outstanding TV champion and world champion. Fourth, I put Shane Douglas. Same type thing. When he was the guy that made ECW, called it the world title, threw down the NWA belt, that was as good of an interview segment as anything I've ever seen. And he, you know, I think was a very good worker. I know people don't all agree with that, but he did a nice job of wrestling in the kind of NWA champion style when he was, before he went to WWF. Clearly something was missing when he came back from WWF, and I rated him a little lower because of that, to be honest with you. And then fifth, which, well, we'll talk about this. I put the Public Enemy. I really, those guys were my, as much as I loved RVD when he was at his peak, I mean, this will, you know, whatever, make me sound like a complete idiot. I would sit there in front of the TV and wave my arms at the Cabbage Patch that they do when they came to the ring. I mean, those guys, their interviews were awesome. Their matches, you know, may not hold up as well, but at the time, I mean, you just thought these guys are badass, entertaining guys that you'd want to drink a beer with, that clearly did a fair amount of that and other things that you'd want watching your back if you were in a fight, too. Even though, you know, this may sound weird, and a lot of this is Paul Heyman's booking, because Johnny Grunge was never looked like the athlete of the day or anything like that, but their stuff they did. And, you know, they did it with Cactus Jack and Kevin Sullivan, Cactus Jack and Mikey Whipwreck. They worked with the Funks. They worked with, I'm trying to remember, the Pit Bulls, the Eliminators, Gangsters. I mean, before they left, and again, when they came back, it was never the same. But when they, I mean, when people, I was heartbroken when they left ECW. I couldn't believe they left because they were so over. And you know, you just, you were sucked into that as a fan. So I could talk about this for an hour, but that's probably too long as it is. That's my top five. I should just mention real quickly, I know I'm cheating here, but sixth is Sabu, and I think some of you guys may get to him.
Okay. Dusty, give us your top five and some reasons why.
Okay. Yeah, like I said, I debated back and forth for a long time on number one, but I ultimately landed on Shane Douglas because he kind of put ECW on the map with that promo after winning the NWA title tournament. That really defined ECW. That was the kind of fighting spirit that ECW was all about. And also, just basically, Douglas was always the bedrock of the company. They were always featuring him, even if he wasn't the world champion. He was always like, oh, and Shane Douglas, you know, he was always a top contender for something. He was always right in the top mix of things. Kind of like, you know, the guy that Paul Heyman could count on. You know, and he went through a very alarming physical transformation during his time in ECW, probably related to steroid use, that kind of limited his later effectiveness. But overall, I think he's number one, even though his finisher was a fucking suplex. Pretty ridiculous.
That was kind of old school, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, very old school. Yep. And, yeah, Heyman said if he had his way, it would have been Steve Austin in that role.
Mm-hmm.
So in a perfect world, it would have been Steve Austin number one on the list, but whatever. Number two, I've got Sandman. Basically for the same reasons that Dan had him at number two. The entrance, the most memorable entrance in wrestling history, and two of the most memorable angles in ECW history. The Tommy Dreamer caning angle. Actually, three. The blinding. And then the whole Raven thing. Stealing your kid. Really memorable angles. And Sandman was basically like the embodiment of a babyface in ECW. Exactly what you needed to be a babyface in ECW. You needed to kick ass, take names, you know, drink beer and take substances. yeah, so Sandman number two. I've got Raven number three because he was kind of the heel version of Sandman. Just the heel that you could always count on. And again, involved in some very memorable storylines, involved in the whole Tommy Dreamer summer camp thing and stealing Sandman's kid, and always had excellent promos. All of his promos were excellent. No matter how intoxicated or drugged up he was, he always cut like these awesome promos. The one I'm thinking of right now is, if you guys remember, I did the right thing, Tommy. Why'd the drunk beat me up? I did the right thing, Mommy. Why'd the drunk beat me up? Oh, just very memorable shit.
I don't want to make a habit out of interrupting, but because you mentioned, there's something you mentioned reminded me that Paul Heyman in the Rise and Fall of ECW DVD that WWE put out in 2004 said that he was so happy about Raven Scott Levy because here was a guy who could pull off anything that Paul Heyman could think of. And, because you said that he was kind of the heel Sandman, I think he was like the amplified wrestling personification of Paul Heyman. Like, I think this might have been Paul Heyman coming out in wrestler form. Like, if anybody can embody the spirit of ECW, it might just be the guy who is basically portraying Paul Heyman if Paul Heyman were a drug-addled pro wrestler. the privileged son who is still angsty about everything.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Like how Vince McMahon books certain people to be aspects of himself. Like,
yeah.
Lex Luger was the patriotic do-gooder aspect of Vince McMahon, and
yep.
the Million Dollar Man was the heel aspect of Vince McMahon.
Yeah.
I definitely think that Paul Heyman saw a lot of himself in Raven.
Yeah.
Not a perfect match, but definitely pretty close.
Mm-hmm.
Another good reason for him to be in the top five. And then numbers 4 and 5, Sabu and Taz, in that order. Obviously, I'm listing them together because they feuded with each other. Their feud lasted several years and was, you know, featured prominently on ECW broadcasts. Two very different wrestlers. I'm not sure exactly why I put Sabu ahead of Taz. Like, that one could have gone either way. But in terms of importance to the company, very equal to each other. Sabu is kind of like the Led Zeppelin of wrestling. Because on his own, you can make a case for him being very good, but boy, did he leave a trail of shit in his wake. A very bad influence on wrestlers to come in the future.
Nice. That's
mm-hmm.
awesome.
Mm-hmm. Every band, if a band tells you, well, Led Zeppelin was my greatest influence, you know they suck.
You might as well just throw
the
disc away.
I don't know why the hell that is. And Taz, he was really, really short, but somehow it worked.
Yep.
Somehow he's this believable monster.
No, that's good booking.
People out there.
That's good booking is what that is. And
that's great booking.
You know, that, and again, that was the guy when I did go to the ECW arena, they brought in Brockus. I don't know if you remember this guy.
Oh, God, yes. The WWE tried to.
And I mean, Taz just kicked the shit out of him. And it was one of the most fun matches to watch. It was kind of like, I guess it was in Wade's thing where he said, you know, bring in Rob Terry and let Sandman cane the shit out of him for 10 minutes. And it's like, yeah, you know, that'd be pretty cool. And watching Taz just beat the crap out of that guy was
yeah.
a lot of fun. And, you know, just my difference, even though I had Taz third and Sabu sixth, I considered, again, all these guys kind of together.
Mm-hmm.
I'm probably holding the fact that, well, I'm giving Taz credit for his really, really strong interviews, which Sabu, you know, he had the pantomime stuff with Rob Van Dam and Bill Alfonso, which could be damn funny. And that's one of the reasons I had RVD number one, is because his interviews were so great in that context. But that was my deal breaker between Taz and Sabu was, you know, they
sure.
both drew that first pay-per-view, Barely Legal. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, Taz just being the pissed off badass just added something, in my opinion.
Yep.
Sorry to interrupt,
right. Dusty. No. Cool. All right. Dusty, anything else there?
Yeah, I just want to note, I've got Van Dam rated a little lower, but that was nothing against him.
Yeah.
It's just I think they have a very strong top 10, and I just couldn't quite find a place for him in it. So,
sure.
I just wanted to establish that.
Okay. Well, my top five, similar to your guys' top five with a few differences here. My number one is Sabu. Sabu was the main reason that I ordered my first ECW videotape out of an ad in Pro Wrestling Illustrated. It was the Hostile City Showdown 1994, headlined by Sabu versus Cactus Jack. And the idea that Cactus Jack was wrestling for ECW as a one-off, I thought was awesome. I'd known of the guy since probably since Continental or USWA when they were on ESPN, and then that went over to WCW and then Global Wrestling, so I've been watching Cactus for a long time. And just starting to read about this Sabu guy in Pro Wrestling Illustrated. And when I found out that those two had wrestled each other and that I could order the videotape of it, I had to. And I was hooked. Sabu, Paulie put it best in the Rise and Fall of ECW DVD. that when you saw Sabu, you're like, oh, this guy's different. To me, Sabu is ECW just in a 5'10", 222-pound frame. Here's this scarred-up freak who doesn't need to talk to get over, flies through the air, sometimes with the greatest of ease and sometimes not. Sometimes there were some foibles and fumbles and follies coming out of Sabu, but that was the beauty of what you got with ECW.
Yeah, sometimes it took two or three tries to make it the greatest of these.
That's right. His triple jump moonsault may have been a sextuple moonsault every once in a while.
Yeah.
Well, the chairs at first, I mean, they didn't, like, prepare all that much all the time. So, like, he'd be stepping on a chair and it'd give out on him. And
yeah.
He was a hell of an athlete because he'd have to, you know, compensate for that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. But here's a guy who had been all over the world in a very short period of time, had been to the Indies, was starting to make a name for himself. At the time, honestly, stood no chance of even getting a second look by the WWF or WCW, and that was the biggest thing about ECW at the time. It was either guys who weren't going to get that audition based on their tape, if they even had a tape, and if they were outcasts, you know, that was another category of wrestlers, but Sabu was just that guy. He was that guy who would come down to the ring in the Hannibal Lecter mask, and they got rid of that after a while, chained up to the gurney or the dolly,
absolutely.
You know, whatever, and they got rid of that for a while. They did the miniature version of the Dog and Pony Show. He had Paul E. as his manager with 911. It took a guy like 911 to hold him back, and then when he let go, he shot into the ring like a bullet, went after your feet. You know, first thing you try to do is shoot at your ankles, and just the whole package of Sabu, to me, was ECW for that time. I know he left for a while, too, but came back, and, you know, he had his problems, whatever. But and then his run with Rob Van Dam was hilarious. Their interviews together were great. Their tag matches were good most of the time, great the rest of the time. So that's Sabu as number one, in my opinion. Shane Douglas was my number two for a lot of the reasons that you guys mentioned. He was like the number one outcast. He was the guy who, you know, he was in Universal Wrestling Federation at the beginning of his career, went on to WCW, toiled a little bit, came to WWF as this, like, totally white meat baby face, was in one Royal Rumble, couldn't get himself over, but whatever. Went back to WCW, became a tag team champion, and people were still kind of hemming and hawing. And my favorite part about his run there was that he was in a six-man tag team match at Halloween Havoc 1992 in Philadelphia. They booed that kid out of the building along with the rest of his team of the Z-Man and Johnny Gunn.
Yeah.
Comes back to Philly in ECW as the number one outcast, can't keep a job anywhere else, and he's like, fuck this and fuck that, and this is bullshit, and I'm swearing, and I hate Ric Flair. And then when they gave him the NWA title and everything that surrounded that, he threw it down. I remember reading about that in PWI, and I'm like, holy shit, where is this all coming from? You know, unbelievable. This is Shane Douglas. And then he goes on, you know, he left again for a very short while and came back even more pissed off, was part of the Brian Pillman angle, feuded with Cactus Jack for a while, held the world title multiple times, had a couple of different valets, and Dusty, like you said, he was a featured player even when he wasn't the champion. I bought a video, I can't remember, it was a show from 95, and I'm having a hard time remembering what it was, but this was after Shane had been champion a couple of times. He's jerking the curtain against Mikey Whipwreck. Like, this is the versatility and the believability of Shane Douglas. He could be up and down the card anywhere, cut a great promo, get himself over, wrestle a good match, and he was the attitude. My number three is Sandman, for the reasons that you guys mentioned. It's, you know, you can't deny the Enter Sandman beer-swigging, chain-smoking entrance. Classic. Something that when I'm 13 and 14 years old watching my first couple of videotapes, I'm like, yeah, this is awesome. This is fucking cool. Even though he was another guy that was sometimes so drunk he couldn't put on a decent match, or sometimes so concussed that he just stumbled around and kicked out of pinfalls when he wasn't supposed to. But still a hell of an entertaining wrestler.
Kicking out against Cactus.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yep, that Texas death match that fucking never ended. Yep.
Down in Florida, I think. I want to say it was.
I had a Texas Death Match on an ECW arena videotape.
Okay. They had a match and they were in a Florida tour that was very similar.
Yeah.
That you could tell he was out of it. happen.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me at all.
Then the later house show in Pensacola where he was so drunk that he stripped.
Yep.
Yeah,
Sandman did not give a shit. And the other thing that was great about him was he was an original. I mean, he was like Joel Goodhart, Todd Gordon era, you know, Eddie Gilbert, Booker era wrestler, Mr. Sandman, that came to the ring with a surfboard and a wetsuit. Yeah. And you saw him. He was another guy that you saw develop entirely, you know, from one extreme to the other. That's my number three. Number four, I have Terry Funk as my number four. Here was a guy who was on the very first ECW television show. He was there as a commentator, but he was there to put his stamp of approval on this new wrestling league. One of the original hardcore wrestlers, or however you want to term it. You know, he'd come and go. He would work for WCW and then come back, or he would disappear for a while and come back. He'd retire and come back. But the important thing about Terry Funk was, again, it was that stamp of approval. It was that thumbs up from Terry Funk. And once ECW got that thumbs up, you're like, okay, we're you know, guns ablaze now. Terry Funk said it was okay. Terry Funk giving his okay to ECW meant 1,000 times more than Hulk Hogan giving his okay to TNA these days.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Plus, he's middle aged and crazy, and he won the world title on the first pay per view. And he and Dory came and wrestled the Public Enemy and strung up Rocco Rock from the Eagle's Nest. How awesome was that?
Yep.
Yes.
And then my number five is Rob Van Dam, and I guess I don't know. In a way, I'm surprised at where I have him, but in a way, I'm not. I think my big thing with Rob Van Dam was that you kind of had that feeling that he was so damn good, and that he was such a great promo and such a great wrestler and had such a great look that if you weren't careful, he was going to disappear on you at any time and be in WWF or WCW on a whim.
Yep.
So as great as he was and as cool as he was, and really for being an acrobatic wrestler that wore a singlet and had cool promos and whatever, as different as he was for ECW, you know, he's definitely in my top five, but I put him at number five below those other guys because for all of the positive things about him, you know, there's always that little hint that when he was Mr. Monday Night, it's like, oh, shit, we're going to lose Rob Van Dam to the competition.
Yeah. No, and I believe that for a while, and then it kind of, to me, and maybe it was wishful thinking, I mean, it turned out to be correct, but I had that feeling with him for a long time, and then I don't remember exactly when, maybe about the time Taz left, you kind of got the idea that, you know, he was going to make this thing go if he possibly could. And that he was, you know, more committed to the, or as committed to that organization with its financial issues as anybody could be. And of course, you know, the end of 2000, he was holding out, and they got him back for the last pay-per-view, the Guilty as Charged pay-per-view. But you know, by then it was a pretty tough. It wasn't the ECW of old, but yeah, I mean, again, that kind of, these are all good lists, and it just kind of tells you how difficult, that shows how well booked the promotion is. I'm sure in tomorrow's show we'll talk about how bad WCW and WWF were at the time and how different ECW was, but you know, that all makes it stand out.
Dusty, any other overarching thoughts so far?
No, there's a couple things I'm going to say when we get to 6 through 10 here.
Okay, cool. Dan, what do you have for your 6 through 10?
Yeah, I was kind of waiting to make a couple of comments that came to mind during your discussion, Eric, if that's okay, because we're going to kind of wrap up on these guys, I think. Shane Douglas, you mentioned. Well, first, I got the same Hostile City Showdown videotape. Although, again, I was watching ECW on about a 6 to 7 week delay on a station in Columbia, Missouri that was America One. I think it was Channel 2 or Channel 11. And it wasn't on the cable. I had to put my rabbit ears on the TV to get it. And I watched that. You mentioned the Shane Douglas interview. I watched the lead up to that NWA tournament on ECW TV, and I was so excited about it. And Paul E. did some great interviews about how 911 was going to win it, and was 911's guy. And then I just completely marked out when Shane Douglas did that. And I didn't know exactly how to take it because, you know, they built it up to, oh, it's going to be so cool, they're going to bring the NWA back. But then I started thinking, well, you know, this is better. I mean, this is its own thing. This is a new beginning, and it's kind of cool that they're bringing it back. And then at the end of that TV program, Public Enemy supposedly vandalized the I don't know, they had like a big sheet that they had ECW written on, and they, you know, they crossed out Eastern and put Extreme or something on it. It was kind of a neat way to end
That's
that
right.
show. But Shane Douglas, one of the, I think it might have been the first or second ECW show I saw. My timing could be off, but this was, I think, before he won the NWA tournament and threw the belt down. Almost the entire show was this interview with Shane Douglas about how great he was.
Yeah.
It was like a 30-minute interview. And I don't know, some people may not have liked it, but I thought, damn, this guy could, I mean, I really was captivated by it. And I thought it was a hell of an interview. And anybody that could do that, I said, you know, okay, I never understood the logic, and some people did, about taking on Ric Flair the way they did. I just because it wasn't like, I mean, Ric Flair wasn't maybe what he was, but it was like there were so many other worse examples of bad things in wrestling at the time.
Yeah,
but
how can you not pick on Hulk Hogan when you're
I mean, all the whole rest of the promotion did. That was Shane Douglas' thing, to pick on Ric Flair, and you just kind of said, okay, after a while, well, he thinks he's the next Ric Flair or whatever. But,
yeah.
I mean, that, to be able to carry that as well as he did, and different people may have different opinions on it, really put him up there in my mind. And the thing you mentioned about Sandman, I remember in 1995, I still have, and I'm not sharp enough to put this stuff on YouTube, but I still have on videotape until it crumbles, the November Rain music videos they did.
Yeah.
And the one they did, I want to say in 95, showed November to Remember 93 and 94, and they show Public Enemy, and they show these different guys, and they show Sandman in this wetsuit and get beat up by Jason. I mean, that's the little clip they show, and I'm like, what the hell is this? And it just goes to show how well they developed all these characters. And that's just a little more to say about those two, I guess.
Okay. So,
but back to my list, 6 through 10. 6, as I mentioned, was Sabu for all the reasons mentioned. I don't think I have to go in much more detail about that. But, you know, that Barely Legal, even though Terry Funk won the world title, that show was drawn, in my opinion, by Taz versus Sabu.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they built that thing for a year and a half, which no one – I shouldn't say that, because the WrestleMania Undertaker Shawn Michaels matches have been very well built. But to build a match for a year and a half like that is – you know, you just don't see that today. And I mean, I was so fired up about getting that pay-per-view because of that. 7th on my list was Raven. And I think that Dusty did a good job talking about the great angles he was a part in. His interaction with Stevie Richards is often underrated, and, you know, had a pretty good tag team with Stevie Richards. His work with Beulah, his work with Kimona, his you know, just his whole personality, kind of the Raven's Flock thing, I mean, was really outstanding. And his interviews were you know, were fantastic. I should have probably watched that Rise and Fall of ECW DVD before this, just to refresh my memory on some things. But I have no argument with him. That was where I cut it off. I had 7 guys, and I was like, well, I don't know. How do I arrange these 7? And to me, there was a clear line of demarcation there. And then to me, 8, 9, and 10 were pretty easy in a second tier. And my 8th was Terry Funk. Again, we can kind of keep this moving. This is mainly for the reasons that Eric mentioned. It's very difficult to quantify Terry Funk's contribution, because it's more than what he did in the ring, as Eric mentioned. It's more of a credibility issue that he lent to the company and to the performers that you can't really, it's very hard to pigeonhole that. But, you know, he certainly gave a tremendous amount to that company. It was certainly cool to see him, you know, win the world title, win that 3-way match at the pay-per-view and beat Raven for the world title right before they lost their satellite feed, which was fortunate that didn't happen then.
Yeah.
He had a match with Sabu, this barbed wire thing.
And, the Born to be Wired,
oh
yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah. And just, you know, this. How old was he at the time? It just, you know, I didn't buy that pay-per-view, that tape, because I was like, I don't know if I want to see this or not. But it just amazing that, you know, what he did for that company. So those guys have all been mentioned, and I won't spend too much time on it. Ninth, and I would assume he's in everybody's top ten, is Tommy Dreamer.
Mm-hmm.
Difficult guy to quantify, you know, in terms of overall length of tenure and contribution to the company. He obviously scores extremely well. You know, he did a lot of the business work for the company there at the end as well. And I, you know, just like everybody else, when I first saw him in those suspenders, you know, I wanted to see the Sandman kick the shit out of this guy. And I was like, this guy.
Yeah.
Such a punk bitch. I just can't, you know, this is going to be Johnny Gunn is who you compare him to. The guy you mentioned that teamed with Tom Zink and Shane Douglas. I mean, this pretty boy, except he wasn't even in quite as good a shape then as maybe he should have been to be wearing suspenders, but
right.
Yeah, they were promoting him as this Marcus Alexander, Bagwell, handsome stranger, Johnny Gunn, whatever. And he was feuding with, Tommy Cairo.
Yeah.
You know, you're just like, oh, my God, they're going to push this guy down our throat. And you really resisted it for the longest time. And then, you know, once he went through all that stuff with Raven and that entire storyline and, of course, the storyline with the Sandman. I mean, it's as much as Paul Heyman's booking as anything. But, you know, you finally came around to Tommy Dreamer, and I never minded his schmaltzy crying interviews as much as some people, I guess, people like to talk about.
Oh, Becky hates them.
Really? I mean, I can understand that. He's not, to me, he's not the level of interview as, honestly, even to me with Rob Van Dam in terms of the entertainment value,
mm-hmm.
or Taz or Shane Douglas or Raven. But, you know, he portrayed his character extremely well, and he certainly gave the fans someone to rally behind. And you know, Wade Keller loved to take shots at Tommy Dreamer. We could have never went anywhere else and blah, blah, blah. I'm not sure about that. I mean, he wasn't going to make big money anywhere else, but he might have had some. I mean, Eric Bischoff probably would have hired him just to piss off all the ECW people.
Sure.
At some point, he did everybody else. I mean, why wouldn't they have brought him in when they brought Raven and those guys in? So I think he had some loyalty to the company above and beyond what some people want to give him credit for. And then 10th was Cactus Jack. Very, you know, despite Dusty's maybe personal feelings about him, I mean, the interviews, the anti-hardcore interviews he did alone, I think, get him a spot in the top 10. And you know, he helped make Mikey Whipwreck in a lot of ways, too. You know, those matches where he was dragging Mikey out of the back to fight Public Enemy, the entire interaction with Mikey before he left the company, they booked it right, having him beat Mikey Whipwreck on his way out of the company, and the response he got from the ECW arena crowd his last night in was one of the coolest things you'll ever see. And I bought that tape to kind of have that in my collection, that post-match interview he gave after the New York City fans had shit all over him, and ECW fans appreciated him. And, you know, he's I can understand that maybe some of the criticisms of him today, but in his ECW time, you know, he's certainly, in my opinion, deserving of a spot in the top 10. And, you know, you could talk about those interviews for all day. I bought a DVD about the time ECW went out of business, which is like the best of Cactus Jack or something.
Oh yeah, it's got more or less a plain cover. It's just like a close up picture of him with some goofy like Photoshop background. And
but it's like 6 hours.
I know, and it's got those interviews like all strung together.
Each one of those interviews, it's just fantastic, and you can watch it and go through the entire. Maybe I'll I don't know if I have time tomorrow, but I could do that and go through the chronology. Oh gosh. Can you edit that out? Chronological
no,
order.
No, sorry. That was a Sabu octuple moonsault.
That's right. But I mean, it's a great DVD to kind of go through the storylines that he was involved with in ECW.
Yep.
And the other thing I'd want to mention is the interactions that you mentioned with Shane Douglas. I mean, when he was teaming with Shane and that whole we trained together and, you know, I gave you a place to stay when you didn't have a place to stay, those were some of both those guys' best interviews. When, you know, even though and I'll give Cactus Jack credit because he kind of was like kissing Shane's ass a little bit. You know, Shane Douglas was like, well, my dad said I'm better than you, but not even quite that blatant, but clearly I'm the alpha guy and you're kind of the second guy. And Cactus kind of went along with it. And, you know, he was, at that point, I think, very unselfish in a lot of ways in the way he worked with different guys. So I may pipe in because I probably forgot some stuff, but that would conclude my top 10.
Dusty, if you can give 30 seconds before you get into the next half of your top 10, if in 30 seconds you can explain your point of view of the anti-hardcore promos, I would love to hear it, and I know everyone else would too.
Okay, well, one of the reasons he's not in my top 10 is because I thought of him as very selfish instead of Dan's opinion that he was unselfish. And an example of that is not only the promos, but, okay, I've got this compilation thing. It has the entire Dreamer versus Raven feud on it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a tag match. It's like Raven and Cactus against Dreamer and Funk.
That was November to Remember, probably.
Possibly.
Was this when he had the Eric Bischoff shirts on and the... Sorry.
What's that?
Was this when he had, like, the Eric Bischoff t-shirt and the...
Yeah,
that's November to Remember, probably
95.
Yeah, Cactus is supposed to take the pin, and he kicks out right at the three count. What a fucking asshole. Fuck that. Oh, that really got my blood boiling. But also on that compilation is one of the anti-hardcore promos. Tommy Dreamer, you'll never make it in WCW or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it just goes on for 35 centuries. It put me in a fucking coma. It made no sense whatsoever. I hated it. I couldn't stand it. I had to fast forward it.
I will say that when Cactus Jack thinks that he's in a groove, sometimes it ends up being more of a rut, and it takes him a long time to get to his point. And I can see where that it would be a possibility for some of those promos. I'll talk about him a very little bit when I get to him in my list, but I was a fan, but I knew that you weren't a fan, so I thought I'd have you talk about it a little bit.
Did you ever, I'm trying to defend the guy a little bit, did you ever see the interview he did before he fought Terry Funk where he's talking about how, God, see, I should have refreshed my memory on this, but Terry Funk's like Axel and he's Izzy and he's maybe I'm not making any sense here, but that one, I mean, he did some really good interviews building up that, some of his early Terry Funk matches too.
That was a Guns N' Roses reference then, I assume.
Yeah, no, okay. Obviously, I don't remember exactly how he tied it in, but it was just, to me, it was fantastic. And then the stuff he did with Mikey Whipwreck, you know, you left the Doritos in my car and I have an eating disorder. I don't know. I thought the guy was pretty hilarious. And when he was doing that stuff on Tommy Dreamer, I always took it as WCW really, well, he did the one thing, you're right, about how they didn't want him. But he also did a set of interviews later that was like, you know, I just need Tommy Dreamer to go with me to WCW, and then I can go back, and I don't know.
Yep. Yeah, he was, the thing is, Cactus Jack was a very cerebral promo, but sometimes it was to a fault. Like, he knew how good he could be, and he knew how smart he was, and he never let anything go over anyone's head, but it seemed like a lot of stuff was like, he was just, like, telling jokes to himself.
Well,
and sometimes it was a miss. I just feel like a lot of times it was hit more than miss.
The one where he was just furious, and this may be the one Dusty's talking about, where he talks about Tommy Dreamer and the Public Enemy, but where he has his prescription pills and he's like, you know, I'm a junkie, but I don't need your pills. I ate that up. I thought it was fantastic. But agree to disagree, I suppose.
Yeah.
yeah. To me, he just gets lost in snarky self-importance.
Well, anyway,
better than being lost in Cleveland.
That's true. Yeah.
Oh my God.
I can't hold
that. I feel so bad for him to have to do that storyline.
Can't hold that against him. Lord.
I feel bad for him being in Cleveland. All right, Dusty.
What the hell is he in Cleveland? What the fuck?
Oh my God! Put dirt on top of dirt. Dusty, what's give us 6 through 10? Give us your 6 through 10.
Oh, okay. At number 6, I've got Terry Funk. For a lot of the same reasons that you had him, where you had him, I just couldn't quite get him in the top 5 because he wasn't there the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
But he really legitimized ECW. He made it cool to like ECW because he was there for like 50 years, you know, before ECW even started, you know?
Yeah.
He was like the perfect guy to put ECW on the map.
Yeah.
His endorsement really meant something. And his promos were fucking awesome. And I'll give you one quick example. It wasn't really a promo, but just mic work. He and Tommy Dreamer are standing in the ring, and he's trying to goad Cactus into coming into the ring, and it's like, Cactus, your mother's a whore. Your wife is a whore.
Yeah.
Your girlfriend is a whore. You're a yellow dog. Like, holy shit.
Yeah, and then the whole thing ended with, I'm assuming, is that the one that ended with Eric Bischoff as a son of a bitch?
I think, yeah, he started mouthing Eric Bischoff.
And that's what set Cactus off. That's what made Cactus turn around. And actually, since those two were at the, I'll try to keep it short, those two were at the Wrestling Hall of Fame in Waterloo, Iowa. They're together to do the training session, among other things. And Cactus specifically mentioned that promo when he was talking to the younger wrestlers and some of the people that were milling about as, like, the brilliance of the promo. So, yeah, he brought that up because of how good it was.
And Dusty, I'm going to just keep after you on this a little bit. What did you not like the Kane Dewey promo either? That's what I'm thinking of.
I could give or take it.
Eric?
The Kane Dewey promo?
Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong, that's part of the compilation on that Cactus Jack
movie,
right?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
then, yeah, I definitely liked it. It doesn't strike me as much as the, well, you might as well go to the coddling arms of the WCW.
Yeah.
WCW fans will be the death of you promo, or, like, the Great Christmas ones, or...
Yeah.
Or like the, you know, riding on the little children's Ferris wheel, chanting,
no.
I'm hardcore. But I mean, the
ECW,
as a,
ECW.
Yeah.
He's baking
the whole,
cookies and shit.
Yeah. As a whole, I mean, they're just brilliant, I think. I thought they worked.
He's like, and he made
so
that fan feel so shitty because he's like, some fan had went to the time to write a sign and bring it to the arena that said Kane Dewey. And then he's like, and I can't talk tonight. And he's like, and Dewey Foley is a 3-year-old boy, you sick son of a bitch.
Yeah.
I loved it, but okay, that's just me, I guess. Sorry, Dusty, I'm taking your time.
Okay. Number 6 was Funk. Number 7 was Tommy Dreamer.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why, but it just occurred to me that Dreamer is sort of like the Triple H of ECW. He's just like always there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Never quite the best. Really kind of a terrible worker. Not that that matters totally, but not a good worker, and I will forever hold the suspenders thing against him.
But you guys, you mentioned them both. He was running for NWA Rookie of the Year. Anyway.
Okay.
That's right.
Back in his suspenders days. Okay, sorry.
But a very good ECW-style babyface. He legitimately would put his body on the line, whatever the fans asked of him. And, you know, it hurt him later on. He's a fucking mess physically, and he had to wrestle in a shirt and jogging pants and was basically like me. But a very dedicated, very loyal. He could have gone a couple times, but chose not to.
Yep.
Number 8, Rob Van Dam. You guys have already heaped praise upon him. I agree with all of it. It's just a testament to ECW that I couldn't find a place for him higher. Number nine, I got Public Enemy. Totally agree with Dan's praise of them. They were the first great tag team in ECW. I opened up the first show at the arena with an act called The Public Enemy.
That's right.
So, yeah, they were around from day one, and they really meant a lot. Very unorthodox, I guess, is the best way to put it. And, yeah, it was kind of shocking when they left. Did you know they almost went to WWF?
Yeah.
In 1995, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, right before they decided to
they'd
go
had
to
a
WCW.
Tryout, had they not? I think they'd had a tryout before they went to WCW. They did a tryout match
yeah.
at WWF.
Yep.
Maybe at Survivor Series that year. I'm not sure.
Yep.
But.
They had a tryout match. They were set to come in. They had agreed to terms but didn't sign a contract.
Yeah.
And WCW offered them more money. So there was one of the first bidding war ECW robberies right there. And at number 10, just a sentimental favorite on my part, Axel Rotten.
Ah.
I fucking love the guy, FTW.
For the MFing win.
He was definitely as entertaining as anyone when I went to that Cyber Slam in terms of him giving kind of, you know, this was, I hadn't seen a lot of shoot interviews, but you went into the room and they kept bringing in the ECW wrestlers and they did interviews with the fans, and he was highly entertaining at that. And his his attitude was certainly, you know, F the haters. And he's like, if people start, I remember him saying, if people start chanting boring, just start yelling, you suck at the fan or whatever.
Yeah.
So I liked his attitude about that. And
He has perhaps the most entertaining RF video shoot interview.
Oh, God.
I can't find it for the life of me, but if you can get your hands on it, get it. It's the best shoot there is.
Yeah.
He's fucking hilarious. He's very entertaining to listen to. He's the man.
That's awesome.
And
all
he,
right.
He had that blood feud with Ian, which was...
Absolutely. They had some crazy matches.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. And they
I totally agree with
him.
That Taipei death match should have been the main event, no matter what else was on that card. How do you follow that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And to his credit, he would bitch about this stuff at the, you know, he'd be like, he was bitching about all this at the Cyber Slam.
Yeah.
He didn't give a shit what Paul thought. He was like,
he would always tell Paul to his face, fuck you.
Yeah, he would. I respect that.
Yep. And he is to blame for the Eric Koulos incident, because Paul Heyman wouldn't get him a plane ticket from Baltimore to wherever, and he's like, fuck you, I ain't driving that, you know?
Yeah, so they had to come up with a substitution.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, that's something we'll get into in the chronology of ECW, too.
Yeah.
Definitely. Well, good. I'm glad someone else has Axel Rotten on their list. He's lower on mine, but... All right, I'm going to run through my 6 through 10 here. Number 6, Cactus Jack. We've said a lot of good things about him and a few bad things. And I believe in the bad things too, but to me, again, he was one half of the match that made me buy my first ECW videotape. I was always a Cactus Jack fan back then, and knowing that he was going to be in ECW, I thought was really cool. And then when he turned it into a full-time gig, it was another chance for him to kind of let loose creatively with his promos. I always thought he was hilarious, and now here's another platform for him to do this. Good matches, great angles, a lot of selflessness, but I can see where somebody would perceive some selfishness too. But I'm having a hard time talking about
maybe some. I keep interrupting people, Eric, but if some stunt granny listener can find that Guns N' Roses promo he did about fighting Terry Funk and how he's Izzy and he's going to overcome the great Terry Funk. It's a really good promo, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Hey, I sought out Izzy Stradlin and the Juju Hounds' first album, but I did not seek out Axl Rose's latest Guns N' Roses entry. So there's something to be said about that.
There is, definitely.
And I just...
Let's see. So it's, I don't know. We've talked enough about Cactus. But, I mean, he was just another one of those, like, he'd already been in the big leagues, and then he was sort of outcast. It turned into being a transition phase for him. He was doing his international stuff at the time, too, Japan, the King of the Deathmatch sort of thing. So he lent his own version of credibility to ECW at that time, which was also an important time because you'd already had, like, 2 years of Shane Douglas, 2 years of Sandman, some of the more so Shane Douglas was an outcast a couple years ago, but some of the more organically grown ECW wrestlers were, you know, are coming up to the top. But then you've also got the Benoit's, Guerrero's, Malenko's doing their work rate thing. And then Cactus Jack is another, like, big league guy who comes in and offers a little bit of credibility to the company. Number seven, Taz, the Taz Maniac, a guy who struck a chord with me right away. I remember reading about him in PWI and The Wrestler as this little sawed-off suplexing Tasmanian devil, and then seeing him wrestle and seeing him evolve into Taz, the human suplex machine, the MMA guy, the badass monster, beating up three jobbers at once, dropping them all on their fucking heads with the Tazplex and the head and arm Tazplex and all this stuff, and then tipping over the stretchers the whole time, Fonzie's bouncing around the ring, screaming bloody murder and blowing the whistle and cutting those great, just like New York style promos with that accent, and you just believed every single word that came out of his mouth.
Yeah.
He was hilarious and scary and completely believable all at the same time. An easy person to get behind and a cool representative for the company, but in a much different way than some of the guys, like I mentioned earlier, like a Sabu, in that, you know, again, he was able to wrestle a believable style, but this time it was more of a mat-based MMA plus some suplexes, drop you on your head type of, like, All Japan shit. So, Taz was really cool. Number eight, Tommy Dreamer.
Kind of, not to interrupt you here, but I want to say a couple things about Taz. Kind of the perfect guy for ECW because WWF wouldn't give the guy a second look because of how short he is.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And it's just a testament to Paul Heyman's booking. Like Dan said, this guy was made a monster when he could have been just laughed off as a joke.
Yeah. Well, in WCW, what would they have done with a guy like the Tasmaniac? He would have ended up like the Renegade, you know, just a blithering idiot. But then, you know, they would have never taken the MMA version of Taz because when is Hulk Hogan ever going to be willing to take a head and arm Taz play?
Yeah, exactly.
No, and when he made that transformation, I mean, it, you know, he was a baby face for about, I don't know, a few weeks when he became, you know, he was now three letter, what Paul E's thing, three letters, one man, I forget what he said, but, you know.
Yeah, something like that.
Just Mr. And then, you know, he had a very believable reason that he was pissed. I think he claimed Paulie didn't pay him when he was hurt or something. I can't remember, but you know, when he turned heel after he became Taz, I mean, God, he just let loose with those interviews, and that's why they had to break him up from Bill Alfonso eventually because his interviews were so damn good. He, you know, it made more sense to put Alfonso with Sabu,
somebody who needed a mouthpiece.
Yeah.
Yep.
And Eric, could you do the honors? You've just been listening to Wrestle Announcer Wrestler.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You may not recognize that voice that you just heard in that last match, but that last voice was a man by the name of Peter Sinercha. That man, Peter Sinercha, is a wrestler. That wrestler who just announced is a wrestler named Pete Sinercha. That Pete Sinercha is an MMA wrestler announcer. You may recognize wrestler announcer as Pete Sinercha, wrestler announcer MMA. But you may recognize him as the guy sitting next to me. But you MMA announcer wrestler recognize Pete Sinercha wrestler as Taz. And then Paul Heyman rubs him on his fucking head like he's a 5-year-old. The one misstep of the whole thing, that was the one misstep in Taz's career. Was letting
Paul Heyman sure likes words. He sure likes words a lot.
He sure does. Oh, my God. All right. Well, my number eight on my list is Tommy Dreamer, really for the same reasons you guys mentioned. He is, you know, there from the beginning, there until the end, whether we wanted him there or not. The fans grew to love him after a while. He was a part of memorable angles. He is the prime example of somebody who would embody ECW. I mean, he like sucked up like a sponge everything that he thought ECW was, and ECW meant the fucking world to him. It was his life, his death, his bread and butter, the food on his table, the air that he breathed. You know, this, he was ECW. He didn't always have the best matches. Sometimes he was sloppy. It got to a point where he'd start wrestling in a t-shirt. He originally wrestled in suspenders and looked like a goof and was kind of hard to get behind at the time. But then he took part in, you know, the caning and the blinding and the lesbian angle and the stairway to hell matches and getting double teamed and triple teamed, and he couldn't pin Raven, couldn't pin him, and finally he got around to pinning him. And you know, there are some negative things you can say about Tommy Dreamer, especially in the latter part of his career up to this point, but it's, you know, Tommy, ECW is not ECW without Tommy Dreamer. And I know a statement like that, you could rationalize putting him higher, but he's a top 10 guy. To me, he's number 8, which is pretty much about the spot where we all have him. Number 9, and I don't regret not putting the Public Enemy in my top 10 because I have these good memories of bringing my videotapes over to friends' houses, and Public Enemy would come on. And they're just like, what the hell are these white guys doing in these full-body outfits and doing the cabbage patch, like you said, Dan, and waving their arms in the air? But as soon as you said that to yourself, you were suckered into the gimmick, and you thought it was the most fun thing ever.
Yeah.
And like, and Dusty, like you had brought up, that was the beauty of Paul Heyman. It was Ultra Clash 1993, the first thing that he does at Paulie's first big show as the ECW booker was bring out the Public Enemy. A couple of guys who are already like mainstays of the Northeast independent scene, totally repackaged, doing this white boy rapper gimmick, and it was phenomenal, and it totally took off.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I think their interviews are really overlooked a lot too, and that's a whole nother dimension with them that I'm a strong fan of. Mm-hmm. They're funny but badass interviews. I mean, they did. The one they did where Johnny Grunge is training Mikey Whipwreck to go climb the tree and get the beers.
Yeah.
I mean, God, their stuff was just hilarious. I thought it was just totally different than anything else you'd see on the show. But then they'd flip the switch and they're badass, and you'd be like, shit, these guys are scary. I already said that. But anyway.
Yeah, hardcore brawling through the crowd. Well, the thing is, all those things said, and again, I don't entirely regret not having them higher, but I put the Dudley Boys at number 9. And it's not because of the whole, you know, 79,000 time tag team champions deal or whatever. But they had a good long run as the best tag team in the company. They started off as a goofy gimmick. It wasn't even, you know, Bubba Ray and Devon. It was Dudley and Snot Dudley. It was supposed to be a takeoff
Dances
of the McKenzie
Dudley.
Brothers. It was Dances with Dudley.
Dudley.
Yeah, Big Dick Dudley, of course.
Big Dick.
And then Bubba's signed out later. Then Bubba Ray comes in, and he's the stuttering idiot. And he keeps trying to say his name, buh, 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 and he looks at Francine, and it turns into buh, buh, big tits, or buh, buh, blowjob, you know?
Yeah.
And it's something for the crowd to laugh at. They're in the tie-dye and the nerd glasses that are taped up, and it's another one of those dog and pony shows where you trot out 5 guys, and none of them really talk, but they're all goofy. You see a laugh, and you have a good time. And then Devon comes in and makes the whole thing serious, even though he's black, and he's supposed to be the brother of all these white guys. Oh, and, yeah, Dances with Dudley the Indian. And then things start to turn the corner, and you know, they're a babyface team for a while. Then they end up being a heel team. And as far as promos go, I agree with you that the Public Enemy's promos were underrated. But watching the Dudley Boys in the ring during those pay-per-views, like in the 98-99 time frame, and watching them just, like, bait the crowd and talk shit and – just some of the shit they said that would almost start a riot in the arena. I'm having a fucking blast watching this. I'm like, some shit's going to go down, and it's going to be because of the Dudleys, and that's so awesome. And they wrestled good matches. They didn't get as repetitive and doing a what's up spot and stuff like that like they would in WWE later on, which when they were still good. But to me, they were the best tag team during the time that they were the Bubba Ray and Devon tag team. And a hint better than Public Enemy, in my opinion, plus another goofy creation out of the fucking nether regions and nooks and crannies of the brain of Paul Heyman. So I don't know. To me, that they rank in the top 10 there at number 9. Number 10 is Raven. I know you guys have him higher, and I completely understand why. I had a hard time with this. And actually, just as a side note, when I originally tried to conceptualize my top 10, I wanted to put Sabu, Shane Douglas, and Terry Funk as the numbers 1, 2, and 3, just based on their three-way dance at the night the line was crossed.
Yeah, yeah.
But I had to squeeze Sandman in there because he's fucking Sandman. So it was really hard for me to put Raven this far down in the list, but I could make good arguments for the 9 before him. But for all the reasons that we said before, like I tried to mention him being the kind of amplification of Paul Heyman as a pro wrestler, the great promos that he did. I mean, there's another cerebral guy, but it wasn't over your head, was like evil and demonic. The great angles that he was a part of, really, really good wrestling matches. He was still Scotty Flamingo and Scotty the Body, you know, you can't deny that he was a good wrestler. He was such an important part of ECW and just that dark, brooding, grunge-like, leather jacket-wearing, you know, jean short-wearing, flannel-wearing character. It was cool, and I mean, he was a very important part of ECW.
He was a master of psychology and emotion.
Yes. Yes.
I remember one match, the fans are chanting Johnny Polo at him,
mm-hmm.
and the entire time they're chanting Johnny Polo, he's taking huge bumps, you know, making the fans happy because they want to see him get his ass kicked.
They give the fans what they want. And actually, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes that's the tactic of the heel is to not give the fans what they want. But
right.
a lot of times, the opposite is true, because fans want to see heels get their asses kicked. You have to bump for them. So
yeah, if the fans want to see you get your ass kicked, you have to give it to them. Some fans want to see heat, 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 and
yep.
you just have to be able to read the crowd, and Raven really is one of the best at it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're at the number 10 mark on both of our, all three of our lists.
Mm-hmm.
Here's my question for you guys. And I don't think this is going to be any sort of off-air, post-production sort of discussion. I know our time is probably limited. We're only 10 wrestlers through our top 20, and we're over an hour into this audio. How would you guys feel about calling an audible and maybe doing the rest of the top 20 list tomorrow and then squeezing in a chronology whenever we get a chance to, whether it's before or after the TNA pay-per-view?
Tomorrow is my last night available for a while, but that's okay. I wonder if this would take as long. It might. I don't know.
I think
it probably
maybe
wouldn't take more than 20 minutes or so.
My guess is we could finish the 11 through 20 in about a half hour because
yeah.
it's just okay. not as important. I mean, no offense to Dusty or to Axel Rotten, but to me, that's to me, you get to those 9 people, and I'll talk about the Dudleys a little bit because
yeah.
I don't have nearly the opinion of them that you do, Eric. But,
okay. yep.
You know, once you get to those 9, well, 10 if you count Cactus Jack, it becomes more picking names out of a hat, and I don't think we need to give those guys as much time as we gave the first 9 plus Cactus Jack.
Okay, Dusty, you agree with that then?
Yep.
Okay, cool. I'm down with it too then, yeah. So we got our 11 through 20. Sorry, folks, that you had to listen to that little bit of production meeting notes, but... Again, that's like in ECW, like Ron Buffone said, we don't edit out the mistakes. Sometimes we do.